The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is sponsored by James Oliver Coffee Company at jamesolivercoffee.com. James Oliver is a second-generation family-owned and Detroit-based coffee roaster offering 19 different blends of freshly roasted coffee. The company pioneered link temperature roasting, and they source the best beans from around the world to create an outstanding coffee experience no matter which beans you choose. To start, try the Alma Mater blend. James Oliver Coffee gives $5 for each bag of its alma mater blend to the Detroit Public Schools Foundation. And don't forget, use the promo code CFSHOW, that's CFSHOW, to get 15% off your first order. James Oliver Coffee, available at select grocery stores in Metro Detroit and, of course, at jamesolivercoffee.com. Remember, use the promo code CFSHOW to get 15% off your first order. That's jamesolivercoffee.com. Hey, greetings, everybody. Welcome to the week that was on Deadline Detroit. I'm your host, Craig Folly. Thank you so much for being with me today. And as we have every week, I've got some regular panelists and some special guests. And my regular panelists include Alan Lengel, co-founder and editor at Deadline Detroit. Thank you, Alan, for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Nancy Derringer, Deadline contributor. Thank you for being here.
Always great.
And our special guest this week, attorney Steve Fishman, making a return visit. We do appreciate that. Welcome, sir.
I'm happy to be here.
Of course. And also we have my friend Portia Roberson, who, of course, is the CEO at Focus Hope and a former co-worker of mine, actually, though, in the Duggett administration as well. But we appreciate you being here on vacation, no less, taking time out in Martha's Vineyard to help us today. So thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Craig, I think we're supposed to just call it the vineyard.
Vineyard. That's right. Exactly right. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, I try to send out an email every week of the things that I want to cover. And but lately, news breaks every single day with this administration. And yesterday, a story came out in The Atlantic talking about how President Trump feels about the military, how he really feels about the military. Four unnamed sources coming forward suggesting that President Trump called basically visiting graves a worthless experience and suggesting that the people in the gravesite are losers. Now, he, of course, came out right away and said, this is fake news. It's not true. But I believe this because we have heard him say that I don't like people who get captured, calling, John McCain a loser, among other things. And we've seen the way that he treated Khizr Khan and his family. And we understand that this is what this guy actually thinks. So I believe that this is not fake news. I actually believe this reporting in The Atlantic suggesting he said these things. And what struck me about this is just how many people in this administration or former members of this administration have been willing to come forward and say pretty awful things about their former boss. And I'm going to tee this one up for Portia here, because she, of course, is a former member of the Duggett administration, but she also worked in the Justice Department with Eric Holder in the Obama administration. And Portia, have you ever seen so many people that used to work for a president willing to come forward and say these things about their former boss? It seems very unusual to me.
It is unusual. I mean, everybody asks you to come back and offer your opinions on former bosses. Certainly you and I have been asked about our former boss. But the reality of it is, I guess people are starting to understand just how bereft of any kind of sanity this president is. And so now they want to come forward. The only thing that bothers me, though, Craig, is that where are they? Well, first of all, you need to go on record, like give up your name. Like you should be proud to stand up and say, you know, this is what's happening and I want people to know about it. And also, it's about time. Like there was another word I was gonna use, but it's about time. I mean, let's be honest. We've been going through this for 4 years. Most of us knew he was crazy. And here we are now where people are finally coming forward to say, here's some proof that he is.
You know, it's interesting. He has a little military background that he went to military school before joining dad's business and being chauffeured around in a limo. But, you know, he does say that he went through his war of his own, sort of going through the sexual revolution and having to dodge herpes and all that. So he understands combat.
Well, you know, I mean, but the fact that he doesn't understand, you know, he's calling these guys losers because they got killed in action in World War One, which was, if you've ever really studied up on World War One, you realize just how horrific and terrible that war was. I mean, all wars are awful, obviously, but that one was particularly brutal. These guys, he says, they're losers. No, they're part of the reason that the United States was on the winning side in that war, because these guys actually sacrificed their lives, made the ultimate sacrifice for their country. And he has the nerve to call them losers and suckers. Now, what does that say? I mean, he calls himself the military president. Nobody's better for the military than I am. But it was announced this morning that he's actually going to cut the funding for Stars and Stripes, the military newspaper. That just was announced this morning for no reason. He says it's a budgetary issue. But I'm sorry, Stars and Stripes, if you're in the military, at some point, you've got to see through this BS and realize that this guy is not there for you. He does not care. And Steve Fishman, I mean, it's just, it's one more example showing off the true character of this guy. And at some point, you can't just let it go.
Right. But the real issue is, why is anybody surprised? Like Portia said, you knew who this guy was 15 years ago. You knew who he was when he was running for office before. You might not have known he was as big a coward as he really is till he started hiding in the basement when there were things going on earlier and dodging the draft with his phony bone spurs. But You really, people shouldn't be surprised. And I agree with Portia 100%. It's long, long, long past time for people to go public. There are people that were quoted in the Washington Post, I think, you know, citing the Goldberg article in the Atlantic, that we're talking about a present day Marine who's up close to whatever. They need to come out and say so and come out and talk about it. And this is the way this guy has lived his whole life. He's always gotten kind of a pass. He's always been able to slide through. But the fact of the matter is, he's a coward. The fact of the matter is, he's completely unaware. You're talking about World War One, Craig. I guarantee you, the only thing he probably ever thought about World War One was, why did we join in there? Let the Germans do whatever they want.
He did say that. If you read this article, he sat there and said, why would we join in on the Allied side in that war? Because he thought the Germans were going to win. And it's just like, where would he have been in World War II?
He likes winners. He doesn't care who wins. He just likes winners.
I think there was one other thing in the Goldberg article that's worth mentioning, which is that a person who, like him, who has no moral character, he only judges things by how much money you can make doing it. And I think in that article that was cited as well, that somebody's saying that, well, there's nothing in it for us. There's no money in this. Why would we possibly do anything like that? He'd hardly be the guy to stop to help an old blind man with a cane walking across Griswold against the light. That's not going to be Donald Trump, because what's in it for him? So the guy will get killed. Big deal. It's just another loser. Look at the world.
Just another loser. But the thing that's really troubling me, though, Nancy, is that despite all of this stuff, we see no real dent in his support. Now, he didn't get any bump out of his convention last week, it doesn't appear. I mean, he may have gained a couple of points in the polls, but nothing significant. The fact is, though, nothing this guy does deters people from supporting him. I mean, he's still got that 39% number, and I'm just wondering, what is wrong with these people?
This is the excess. This is going to turn into be the excess Hollywood story of the 2020 election. I mean, it's a horrifying revelation. I agree with you that it's absolutely true. However, I also agree with Portia that it's trouble. I mean, you said, oh, look at all these people who are willing to you know, shit all over him. But they're doing it anonymously. And they're doing it anonymously. And they have their own reasons. And we know that a lot of people, you know, can only speak up under, you know, very strict secrecy. To me, it's very, very obvious that John Kelly was one of the main sources on that story. And the fact that John Kelly, when they were standing at the grave of John Kelly's son, and the president says, I don't get it. What did you do to them? And that John Kelly did not immediately turn to him and give him a knuckle sandwich, like right in his stupid nose, is, you know, doesn't reflect well on John Kelly. But okay, let's let that go for now. The fact is, this is a cult, and it's a cult of personality. And like all cults of personality, there's not much you can do about it until something significant happens to the personality. So this is going to be, this is a cancer. You talk about a cancer on the presidency. This is a cancer on the country, and it's going to be here for long after Donald Trump finally rides into the sunset, farting all the way. Go ahead.
I was going to say that I think we need to have people in this administration step forward and quit and in protest. We need people from the CDC to quit. We need people from the FDA to quit. We need people to stand up now and say, no, we are not going to change the numbers. I mean, Dr. Fauci had to come out after the CDC tried to manipulate the numbers and say, oh, only, you know, 94% of the people who are dying have underlying conditions. And I have to explain to people that underlying conditions, so what? If you have hypertension, that it's manageable in most cases, but if you have COVID, perhaps it's not. And Dr. Fauci had to come out with a statement saying, no, the 185,000 deaths are COVID related.
Yeah, they wouldn't.
It's like saying, I didn't die of AIDS. I died of pneumonia. So, you know, right. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and we'll get to COVID in just a little while, because obviously there's a lot of talk about a vaccine and having something right before the election. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Steve, go ahead.
Let me just toss one thing. When you said that the polls haven't changed, I think that may be accurate, you know, in terms of the polls of the country. But I'm sure you've seen the military. The military is usually, what, 80% for the Republican, 90%, 75%. The last one I saw was something like 45 for Biden and 41 for him. So there has been a change there. And I think that the combination of him turning a blind eye to Putin paying people to assassinate our troops and then this whole business coming out. And I think it's made a difference. And that's a significant dent in his support. You know, my thing has been all along that I haven't heard of or talked to one person that voted for Hillary Clinton and now says, oh, but I was wrong, I'm going to vote for Trump. But there's thousands out there. We read about it. We hear about it, that voted for him in the past. And maybe the military are thinking the same way. So maybe we shouldn't get all gloom and doom just because the media sometimes tries to start bringing it back. Oh, it's an even race again.
Yeah. Unless it could be doom and gloom if indeed Trump's request for voters in North Carolina to go vote twice comes to fruition. This is a guy
right.
who basically said, yes, go ahead, vote by mail, but then go try to vote again just to test the system, which, of course, is illegal. The response from just about every Secretary of State voter official in the country is like, don't do that. You could get arrested for that. That's against the law. It's funny.
I did have a panhandler at the corner of Griswold and Fort Street who said, I was asking him, I said, make sure you vote. He said, yeah, I'm going to vote. And he said, I'm going to vote by mail. And then I'm going to vote in person. I said, no, do not do that.
No.
And he was serious.
But well, you know what? By doing that, what he can do by doing that is it all lends itself to his claim afterwards that all of this is fraudulent and I'm not leaving the White House because right. the election was all, you know, all fraudulent. Because there will be right. those people that will say, I did exactly what the president told me to do. And right. he will go back and say, no, it really wasn't. I was telling you to try it. But if you knew you had already voted, then you shouldn't have voted in person. But now, since you're telling me you've done that, this proves my theory that the election was fraudulent, and if
he's encouraging the fraud,
let's pray that he loses. Right, he can encourage his same message, so he can stay regardless of what the outcome is.
Well, interestingly enough, I mean, I've seen some scenarios out there where, of course, with the increase in mail-in balloting and, you know, Jocelyn Benson told me in an interview just a couple of weeks ago that it might be Friday before we have final results in Michigan, so that the early returns from these states could show Trump with a big lead. And then, of course, as these ballots get counted in states, obviously it turns. And a lot of people are concerned that this is going to set up the scenario in which Trump has a reason to suggest that somehow fraud has been committed here because of the mail-in ballots, creating a constitutional crisis, which I would argue we might already be in. Go ahead.
It's going to take us a month to get Detroit's results. So Friday is being very generous. At the rate we're going, it'll be a month before we get Detroit's results. So that Friday is just for the rest of the state of Michigan, because clearly at this point we've shown that Detroit is going to take forever anyway.
Well, you know, I was encouraged. I was encouraged with the state jumping in, though, to help out the city of Detroit, because the clerk in Detroit might need some help.
She's definitely going to need some help. Can I say one thing, though? I'm not sure about this, and you're better informed than I am, Craig, and you may know, but I believe that the policy is in Michigan that as the absentee ballots come in, they cannot be taken out of the envelope until the polls close. Okay. Yep. Now, this is probably a practice that made sense back when absentee ballots were a fairly small portion of the overall votes cast. but they've been growing every year. People like the convenience of it. And then with this Proposal 3 that passed in 2018 and the pandemic, we all know that we're expecting this onslaught of, you know, it seems as though this might be the time for some prudent modification of some of these practices to speed things along on counting night. You know, when we're, I mean, when I voted absentee, I had to put my ballot in the secrecy envelope, then put the secrecy envelope in the outer envelope. You could take the outer envelope off. You could check the poll book and then, you know, put it in a safe place so that it didn't come out of the secrecy envelope until the polls closed and you can start counting.
They're talking about doing some stuff at least earlier in the day, taking out the ballots.
Well, they're talking about it, but
the Republican legislature
it would take a legislative fix. And yes, and right. Nancy said some prudent changes. Prudence is not what I expect from the Republican legislature in Lansing. That has not been their strong suit at all. So Jocelyn Benson is asking for those legislative fixes to make it so that we don't have to wait till Friday to get results. Whether or not they're willing to do that for her in the next month and a half, I doubt very much that we'll see that happen.
No, they won't.
But I did like,
they don't believe in democracy.
I did like Dana Nessel's tweet yesterday, though,
which
she was talking about this voting. She says, hey, look, if you do try to vote twice, I will have you arrested and I will prosecute you. That's pretty blatant. She was great about it.
She's great at Twitter and she's great at shade. So I really
She certainly is fearless when it comes to that sort of a situation. Yeah. But I mean, how seriously does anybody think the public will take it if there is a delay in the results? I mean, are people going to buy into this fraud conspiracy? Because look, we're seeing QAnon numbers getting to like 20% territory where people are starting to believe this crap. What's the likelihood that people are going to buy into the conspiracy part of this?
Yes. Okay. Yes and yes. I mean, clearly the people who are Trump supporters, some of them are going to buy into it. It goes without saying, whatever he says, they're going to believe. I mean, you know, it's interesting just to get back to the military. You have to ask yourself what sane person in the military would vote for him after these revelations, but he will say they're not true and that'll be good enough for them to vote for him.
Speaking of weird things that the president has done recently, he, of course, is now also pushing this conspiracy theory about plane loads full of people dressed in black, Antifa people jumping on planes to basically come and find your community. And this basically was something that started on, you know, like 4chan and Facebook a long time ago. And then the president says, no, I've seen it. And I talked to a guy who was on a plane and he couldn't really point to anything. But then Bill Barr comes out there and tries to back him up. Of course, our wonderful attorney general, and I have two Justice Department people here with me, too, people that deal with the Justice Department a lot, in Portia and Steve. So, Steve, I'm going to give this one to you. Bill Barr once again giving cover to President Trump, showing for me that his role is different than previous attorneys general.
We've talked about this before on this show. All attorney generals that I can think of, maybe with the exception of John Mitchell, since he went to jail for Nixon, they viewed themselves as the ultimate people's lawyer. That's who they know what the attorney general's office is about. This guy, because he has his own worldview, I think he probably knows deep down that Trump's a fool. I think he knows he's a career criminal. I know you'd have to be blind, deaf, dumb, and blind not to know that. But because of his worldview, which he expressed so nicely in his speech at Notre Dame, you know, it's been a while now, he sees the other side of it as being worse than whatever it is that Trump's going to do. He doesn't even maintain the pretense of being the people's lawyer anymore. Now it's obvious, whether he's on television, whether he's speaking at Congress, whatever, he views himself as an apologist for the president and as the president's lawyer, which is a really big disaster for this nation. And it's something that people should be thinking about going forward. In addition to having the chief fool around for four more years, you're going to have this guy around too. So
I think it's fascinating that Jeff Sessions came in and we were all so skeptical that Jeff Sessions was going to have any integrity. And he was actually some of his policies on drugs and immigration were horrible, but he did try to maintain integrity for that office. And so it's sort of ironic that here Bill Barr, who was sort of a veteran who knew his way around much better in the Justice Department, is such a whore I mean, it's crazy.
Well, okay,
it astounds me that people who had like what I consider to be pretty decent careers before Trump, right, are like, bump it, I'll throw it all away for him. Like, I don't care. Yeah. It's all right. I'm like, where do all these people go afterwards? Like, I mean, they do know that this ends. Hopefully it ends in, 60 days, but it's going to end at some point. The guy has shown you that he's not going to be loyal to you. So what do you do afterwards? But they take again, I might not agree with anything they believe, but they're pretty stellar careers and they just toss them all for him.
You know what, Portia, I really think Barr for sure. And I keep basing it on that public speech that he made. I think a lot of these people, we don't understand how people can think that way. We live in a mixed community. We spent our whole lives around all kinds of different people. We don't make any kind of a statement to ourselves that, oh my God, the world's going to fall down. All these black people or these Jews or these Muslims or whatever it is.
Come and get a suburbs near you.
but I mean, in all honesty, when you go through, we know what the suburbs are outside of big cities. What this guy talks about, and maybe Barr and them believe that stuff. I agree with you. You would think that they wouldn't want to sell out their reputations for the rest of their lives. But on the other hand, who do they spend time with? You think they're sitting around with people like us? I mean, the people they're sitting around with maybe think like that. It's sad, but that could easily be the explanation for it. If a guy believes that it's going to be a cataclysmic thing that's going to happen, oh my God, here come all the brothers and the sisters and the Jews and the Muslims, and the next thing you know, it won't even be a country. And and keep in mind, not Barr, but the rest of the 39% that Craig's talking about, all they're listening to is phony news. QAnon, 300,000, 400,000 people believe that. Satanists, baby
pedophiles. Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I mean, there's a person who lied so frequently, and yet there's a place for her, employment. Somebody's just going to think she's the greatest. There's a big job waiting for her. If not, I'm not even sure what she's doing now, but there's a possibly a political office, or I'm sure there's a big job in big PR firm.
I'm glad you brought up Sarah Huckabee Sanders, because there was an interesting story involving her week, in which apparently the president tried to pimp her out to Kim Jong-un. Apparently Kim Jong-un in their meeting hit on her.
He winked at her. It's hard to hit on somebody in a language you don't speak, okay?
Come on, man.
Sitting in the limo afterwards said, maybe you should take one for the team. I kid you not.
The thought of those two doughy individuals, having at each other is just, I'm sorry.
His wife has taken one for the team, so in his world, it's not that odd. She's taking one.
I'd like to sell t-shirts that said,
all the women he's been involved with have basically made a decision to take one for their own personal team. Right. So,
As I said, I'd like to have a t-shirt that says, I shtuck Kim Jong-un.
I took one for the team.
That's basically what everybody's going to be saying when the Trump administration is over. Yeah, I took one for the team. And, look what it got me. All I got was this lousy t-shirt. That's what it's gonna be. Oh, boy. Speaking of Bill Barr, I thought this was interesting. And I want to ask you about this, Fishman, because Bill Barr is talking about an antitrust suit against Google, of all people, which is the deepest pocketed company outside of Apple. And a bunch of the people who have been working on this case says it's not ready. He wants to get this out there before the election, wants this suit to get started. And a bunch of the guys who are working on it stepped off, said, we're not ready to do this. We don't want to bring it yet. How dangerous is it to bring a case against a company like Google if you don't have your ducks in a row?
I think Portia and I can pretty much tell you for sure. I don't know if you want to use the word danger, like there's going to be physical peril, but you want to blow a case in federal court, whether it's a case against Google or a case against one of my clients where there's a little interesting things going on, bring it too soon. Because as soon as you bring it too soon, you think Google's going to hire a bunch of schlubs to defend it? You're going to be dealing with David Boies and all these kind of people. And if they're not ready, when the people in the Justice Department, the line prosecutors, and keep in mind, the bosses are talking, but it's the people on the line that know what's going on. They're the ones issuing subpoenas. They're the ones that are going through all these records. If they're saying it's not ready, And he's saying we need to do it before November, let's say, for some reason, right? Yeah. Because we want to show how tough we are on these big companies. The odds are they'll file, maybe they'll quit, like some of those prosecutors did in the Flynn case and things of that nature. But I can tell you for sure, no assistant United States attorney in this country wants to stand in front of a judge or a jury with a case that he or she doesn't think is ready. So that's the simplest answer I can give you. If they're saying it's not ready, it ain't ready.
Well, and again, yeah, because it's not like Google doesn't have resources to hire the best attorneys.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, these are the guys that are charging thousands of dollars an hour, and Google will gladly pay all of it to maintain their monopoly hold on this of stuff. It's not a small case. I mean, if you're talking about antitrust stuff against one of the big tech companies, we've been talking about the possibility of regulating a lot of them for a long time, but this is something completely different. I mean, what's the standard of proof on something like this?
You're asking a criminal lawyer what the standard of proof is on an antitrust case?
Why not?
It's probably a preponderance of the evidence. That's what all civil cases are, but don't hold me to that. It's like you asking me to write your will. I can write a will for you, but your kids probably won't get anything.
But you know, you think about like the last big breakup case that I remember was AT&T, right? And was split it into the five baby bells and all that kind of stuff and has since gone on there. But I mean, that case took years.
Sure.
This is not something that's just there for headlines one day. I mean, if you're going to take on Google, then you know that all the other tech companies are going to lawyer up real fast, check all this kind of stuff to make sure that they are protected. This is just, it's picking a pretty big fight, it seems to me.
Agreed. But I don't think they care about that, quite frankly, Craig. They live from headline to headline. You have a president who lives watching Fox News. I mean, that whole crazy stuff about the Antifa people clad in whatever they were going. He got that from some lunatic. And so Barr probably doesn't care. There'll be a headline says the Justice Department takes on Google. That's good enough for Trump because he doesn't read farther than that anyway.
Very true. All right. Well,
does anybody else think it's funny, though, the idea that anarchists wear uniforms?
Yeah. Well, I know. And they don't have a website. It's not like Antifa.com. You know, actually, Antifa.com does exist, and it directs you to Joe Biden's website, believe it or not. So I got to give somebody props for some high-level trolling on that one.
Yeah.
So that was pretty good. That came out this week that somebody had done that. So somebody bought up that domain name, and it does go to Joe Biden's website, which, who knows? We'll see. All right, we got to move on. Let's see here. What did I want to get to? Oh, let's go local here for just a second, because the Court of Appeals here in Michigan puts Warren's term limits proposal on the ballot. Now, Mayor Fouts is potentially going to be able to seek a fifth term as mayor of Warren. We could just say his term has been somewhat controversial. There have been a lot of things that have gone on with Jim Fouts over the years. But they had tried to argue some very weird technical point that the governor didn't sign off on this in time, even though the deadline she had met. And so the appeals court says, yes, this can go forward. It will be on the ballot, a term limits measure. Mayor Fouts, potentially term limited out of office. Is that the only way to
shocking.
Get rid of this guy?
Shocking. He's, you know what, I'll say something about him. I mean, he's been around a long, long time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, come on. He's only about 42. You know that.
Some of the things that have come out.
Well, we just lost Alan. He was going to say something great.
He's
but
talking. You know, I can hear him.
There he is.
I kind of Alan. Just kind of like, you know.
Some of the stuff has just been horrific, what he said. But he is, he's a student of government. And he's actually a competent mayor. He's just, the stuff he said, though, has been so horrific. So I think, I don't know. I mean, he keeps getting reelected. Warren is a well-run government generally.
Well, you know, hey, what did they say? Hitler made the trains run on time. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an extreme analogy. What's that?
Mussolini made the trains run on time.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Forgive me. It was a petty dictator. I got him wrong.
Yeah. To retire and embrace his and go on his pilgrimage toward the Playboy Mansion, because that's really where he belongs. You know, just like, you know, listen to Dave Brubeck. You know, glass of bourbon is
that right?
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, I love the fact that he's fought so hard to keep this off of that ballot, though, and to come up with any excuse he could. And he really did try. His clerk was just, she pulled that one out of thin air. So, And they lost. So we shall see. All right. You know, we've been going a little while now. I did not want to let the week go by without talking about, of course, coronavirus. There's a real push to get a vaccine before Election Day. Doesn't mean it's going to be ready. Doesn't mean it's going to be proven. And it's probably going to be several months after the election before it can even get distributed in any reasonable measure so that we could all get it. So, but what's everybody's level of faith that this vaccine is going to be safe and effective?
It's not going to, it's not going to happen. It's vaporware. Sorry. Go ahead, Portia. Sorry.
No. Go ahead. I was just like, yeah, I'm good.
Well, I think it's interesting. Whenever, here's a journalism pro tip. Whenever you see a potentially enormous story that is only covered by one news source, in this case, the McClatchy DC Bureau, beware. Okay. They were the only ones who picked up on that and said, you know, potentially a vaccine arrives by the beginning of November. Wow. What timing?
Yeah.
It's like, it's not going to happen. And I wouldn't take it. And I don't think at least half the country wouldn't take it. I heard on another podcast, which will go nameless, somebody saying, I'll take a vaccine that is recommended by Angela Merkel. I'll take one that's recommended by Dr. Fauci. I'll take one that's recommended by Justin Trudeau. I will not take a vaccine that is recommended by any member of the Trump administration. And that's kind of my bottom line, too.
You wouldn't need it. You can just drink Clorox. What do you need a vaccine for? You just drink Lysol.
Exactly. Well, you know, but if they could find a way to put it in little capsules, Steve, that might make it easier to take the bleach.
So let me say this about the whole notion of vaccines. And let me reach back 65 years when I was in first grade, I think, at Bagley Elementary. When Jonas Salk came up with the polio vaccine, we didn't have social media. We didn't have QAnon. What we had was an announcement that said, all right, everyone in the first grade, go out and stand on Roselawn, get in a line. We're going to do something to you, whether it was a shot or the capsule, I can't remember. We all stood in the line. We all got a shot. We all went home. Our mom says, what happened in school? I don't know, Ma. They told us to line up. They gave us a, oh, she says, that, don't worry about it. That was for polio. Your Uncle Simi that has polio, you won't get it now. 100% of the kids took it. Nobody questioned it because there was no politics in it, right? No. So now, 65 years later, I agree with you guys. I agree with what Nancy said for sure. If it was coming from a reputable place with reputable spokespeople, like who you named, Angela Merkel or Justin Trudeau or Fauci, then I think a decent percentage of us, not of the QAnon people, but a decent percentage of us would take it. The problem is, from what you see, 30 to 40% of the public ain't taking any vaccine, no matter what. They don't even want their kids vaccinated against smallpox, for God's sake. You know, so it's a lot different than where we were in 1955.
Polio also was a truly terrifying disease, and people didn't get a glancing blow from polio. I mean, some people recovered, but I mean, there were an awful lot of people. I remember kids in braces, and I'm talking about braces on their legs and those armhole crutches from in my school. So I mean, it's easy for a woman to say, well, you know, one of these natural moms, measles, no big deal, a lot of people get it and get over it. And it's true, but polio is a different kettle of fish.
And measles actually kills a lot of people too, believe it or not. So
it kills a lot. It does, but it doesn't kill as when you think of like how many people polio cripples compared to how many people measles kills. It's not even comparable.
Very, very true. Very true. Yeah. All right. Well, we lost Alan again for a second. I'm sure he'll be back in just a moment. But, you know, like I said, I got to mention the latest incident up in Rochester, New York. The police handling the situation with the guy who clearly has mental illness. He was naked on the street. They put a bag over his head, like one of those spittle bags. So because he said he had coronavirus or something, but he clearly was having an episode and he ended up dying in a few days after being apprehended by the police. And you have protests that are going on up there. No shock there, but just another incident. And I'm thinking to myself, based on everything that we have seen over the past few years, especially when it comes to Black Lives Matter, why are the police still making these kinds of mistakes over and over again? And to see these guys belittling this guy as he's having an episode is just, I mean, it's just another example of, we really need to be careful of who we're putting in these positions of power.
Craig, but this is exactly why people are talking about defunding the police. It's a horrible expression. It's a horrible term for it, because that's not really what they mean, to not have any existing law enforcement.
Sure.
But police are responding to circumstances that they are not trained to respond to. They really aren't. Police are actually really there to investigate a crime after it happens. Sometimes they are able to prevent crimes from happening, and we want them to be on the streets and prevent, you know, people breaking into cars and stuff like that. But exactly what you're talking about is having a mental health expert to respond to incidents like this, having somebody who's trained in domestic violence and de-escalation trained to go to those kind of incidents. It's not about sending a police officer who really is, our police system is militarized. Like, they come out for a confrontation. So when they see somebody and the guy's mentally ill and he's spitting and he's saying he has coronavirus, their response is from a military standpoint. You know, it's from a confrontational standpoint. It's from, you know, let me get, make other people safe. So do whatever I have to do. And so I don't think it's ever going to be about them making mistakes or correcting their mistakes. It's going to be from changing, dismantling the way the system works, figuring out ways in which you can fund it differently so you have the appropriate amount of law enforcement officers, but you also use some of the money to send out other people, maybe with the police officers or to respond to certain episodes or whatever the case might be, because this is not working. I mean, there's just, I mean, it's not even worth talking. I mean, we're so far away from George Floyd now. I'm like, people who are doing things in response to George Floyd, are you doing it in response to George Floyd or now Jacob Blake or now the gentleman in Rochester? There's so many that happen. We're all completely desensitized to it because it happens every other day in some city. It's crazy. I can't believe, like, I just don't know what the approach is, but I do know that what we have is absolutely not working right now.
Craig, you might remember we talked, this was before obviously Jacob Blake, but we talked about this one after Floyd, and I said, Portia and I agree literally 100%, because I said pretty much the same thing. The biggest problem, it's not a matter of a quote mistake. I don't think it has anything to do with police officers making mistakes. I think what Portia said is exactly true. Until you change the focus of how we're going to respond to situations, when do you want the cops there? When there's a barricaded gunman, right? Who's, and when they do that, they bring a psychologist, they bring a psychiatrist, right? Because they know that somebody who has that as their profession has a better chance of finding out what the hell this person's thinking about and maybe doing something about it. As long as you have a mentality, as Portia called it, as a militarized mentality, the only thing you know is we use force to put a stop to whatever it is that's going on. If it's a naked, crazy guy, we just use as much force as we need, including tying him up like he's getting hung down south, which is what it looked like to me when they put that thing on his head. It's just a matter, and I agree with her again, using the phrase defund the police was dumb, because it gives people the idea that you don't want to have police officers. Nobody has got any sense of saying that, including the people that live in our city. Nobody's saying that, because you need police officers for certain things. The problem is the police should be responding to things for which they have training and other people. When you say defund, if we deflect some of that money to have psychologists or mental health experts, whatever you want to call them, that's when you'll see fewer incidents, and I wouldn't call them mistakes. You'll have professionals out there who are used to responding to those kinds of scenes. Police officers, any cop, Portia knows this when she was in the prosecutor's office. There's not a cop on the planet that won't tell you the last thing they want to go to is a domestic violence run, right? That's right. All, yeah. Because they don't have any training in that. And they don't know what to do. And it always turns bad, right? The people who are trying to do something to each other now want to do something to the, you need an expert to come along with you when it's a domestic violence run, because police officers respond the same all the time. So we're on the same page, and it's nothing different than we talked about after Floyd's murder.
To me,
but Craig,
and I know we're running low on time. Go ahead.
It's still better to say it's a mistake than it is to equate it with a golf putt. So you did.
You know what? Thank you, Portia. Because I forgot about that. And I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, that just shows just how disconnected and no, this guy has no sense of empathy whatsoever. Hey, it's like a golfer missing a three foot putt. They choke. No, it's not like that at all.
I mean, his world is so narrow that's the best he can do as an analogy.
Agreed.
To golf is insane.
It's training plus culture. Okay. Yeah. I mean, police work has a very bleak, you know, dark humor, office culture. You know, when cops talk to one another, you know, they use language that we probably wouldn't approve of. It's the same kind of thing you hear in a newsroom that you probably hear in a trauma ward. You know, there's, You know, there's all kinds of small groups of people who deal with unpleasant situations on the regular and develop these kind of, you know, black humor defenses against them. But it's also training. As long as I've been a reporter, mental health experts have been saying we need to get cops trained to understand what schizophrenia looks like, what a person off their meds looks like, and get them to where they can handle it. But, you know, in this case, Rochester, New York, evidently they haven't had that training yet. So.
All right. Well, we've got to move on here. We've been going for a little while yet, and we're a little over, but we still have to get to Schmuck of the Week. And it's time for the Schmuck of the Week nominees. Who wants to go first today? Nancy.
First.
Nancy gets to go first.
Oh, okay. I'm going first with Ivanka Trump.
Oh, what did she do?
Well, she came to Detroit this week on her pointing and posing tour. One of the things that she does, you know, where she sweeps into the place with her beautiful hair and her beautiful clothes and her 6 foot and stiletto heels, you know, and then she puts on, maybe she'll put on a hard hat, you know, or a mask or something that just kind of makes her look cute, you know, cuter. And then she kind of talks and she nods and then she points and then she asks questions and then she'll say a few words about job training. It's very important for me and the president. And it's just, it's so, so important for the future of our country. And I would just like her to put a sock in it. So that's fine.
Nancy Derringer has a Halloween costume this year.
I can never pull it off.
Sure you could. Not makeup, straighten your hair, put on a wig. It'll be good. All right. Alan, go ahead.
Mine is Michelle York, a woman from Wyandotte, who at 2 a.m. in the morning apparently ordered McDonald's from DoorDash. Wait. And when she was drunk, apparently, when the guy showed up, he showed up early. The fries were still hot, and she shoved him, and he gave her the bag and tried to walk away as quickly as possible. She ran in the house, got a gun, and tried to fire at him. The first two times the gun didn't work properly, and then the third time he got off a shot. He was in the car by then. He called 911 and she was arrested. And my feeling is at 2 a.m., anybody who's bringing me McDonald's, I should be grateful for if I'm drunk.
Yeah. Absolutely. If the, you know,
you should not get shot at.
Well, we got issues with your microphone there, Alan. Not exactly sure what happened, but we got it. Basically, a crazy lady shoots at a McDonald's DoorDash driver at 2 o'clock in the morning in Wyandotte. You know, that's my mother's hometown. I love Wyandotte, and I hate to see that that happen there. That's bad. How about Portia? Portia, who's your schmuck of the week?
I'm throwing it back because, like I said earlier, we've had so many incidents. So I'm going back to the Attorney General of Kentucky, who still has not charged the cops who killed Breonna Taylor. The New York Times had an article this week that listed, that talked about how this all occurred. And Mr. Fishman will know, like, there were so many mistakes made by these, and I'm using the word mistakes, because there was not an ambulance on the scene when they were going to execute this warrant. So in case somebody got shot. Mistakes like, well, this was not a mistake. One of the cops went around to the side of the house and shot through her house and into somebody else's house. They didn't even discover that Breonna Taylor was injured until her boyfriend, because the cops had gone back outside to take care of the cop who had been injured. They were so concerned about him, they did not know that Breonna Taylor had been injured until her boyfriend called 911 himself inside the house. So it was just a calamity of nonsense, and it is beyond time for the Attorney General to fire those cops. There is no reason, or charge them or something. They are just on leave with pay. It's ridiculous. So that's my schmuck of the week.
Very good. Steve Fishman.
Let Nancy go. I'll go last.
Oh no, Nancy went already.
Oh,
she went first.
mine, at the risk of bringing up something that's really not all that relevant, my schmuck of the week is Nick Saban, the football coach at Alabama. The reason being, I've been paying attention, probably a lot of people have, to who's going to play football, who's not this year. And, you know, Big Ten, Pac-10, no football. Down south, where they pretend, by the way, the NCAA and the University of Alabama and the SEC schools, pretend these are student athletes. Nick Saban's quote, look, the only problem we have down here is the students. If they keep letting the students come around, our football players are all going to get sick. We need to get rid of the students, keep the football players. We'll keep them down in one place. And all you have to say is, I don't know if he said it to a reporter, but if I were the reporter, I'd say, well, you know, coach, whatever happened to that phrase, student athletes, that could be made him schmuck of the week. Because he told the truth, which the NCAA has been trying to avoid for back when we played.
Yeah, basically, it's your free labor minor league team is what exactly. It is.
Exactly. Every time they call them student athletes because of the lawsuit, okay, that was filed by the basketball player. So now every time they talk student athletes, except Saban kind of forgot because he was so into football, so he's the schmuck of the week.
Well, it is Alabama. I mean, they could have a nuclear bomb land in Birmingham and they'd still be playing football in Tuscaloosa that week. That's true. All right. Well, my schmuck of the week is none other than Mr. Steve Scalise. Everybody knows the wonderful member of Congress. He's the House Minority Whip. Now, basically what he did was he shared a video on social media that had a guy in a wheelchair talking to Joe Biden. Now, the problem is this guy in the wheelchair has ALS. He has a computer assisted voice like Stephen Hawking does. And what they did was they doctored the video to make it seem like this guy asked a question that he did not ask to make Joe Biden look bad. That is the ultimate in scummery, in my opinion. Altering this guy's video, the guy did end up writing a piece for the New York Times saying, no, I did not ask that question. And they manipulated the video to make it look like I did something that I did not. Then Steve Scalise actually had to go onto Fox News where they barely asked him a question about it. I mean, they sort of asked him, well, how do you feel about that? And should you have done that? He's like, well, no, I guess the video shouldn't have been doctored. But, you know, hey, the point is still the same. Which is
sorry if you were offended.
Sorry if you were offended. That's exactly it. And so Steve Scalise, for taking a guy with ALS and doctoring the video to make him look like he asked a question he did not, is my schmuck of the week. Steve Scalise is in the running for schmuck of the month as well.
Earned.
I mean, well earned. So that is my schmuck of the week. So I don't know if we have a clear winner out of those. I'm kind of thinking the McDonald's lady might be at the top of the list. But
hey, who hasn't done something like that when they're drunk, huh?
and kudos this week though, and I can't remember her name. I wish I could, but it's a great name. But the mayor of Rochester, New York, the statement she made yesterday when she suspended those police officers that were involved in that thing was one of the better statements I've heard throughout all of these incidents lately. And she's somebody to keep your eye on because I thought her statement yesterday was spot on, suggesting that these officers had forgotten their humanity, which is really important. So up and coming star, perhaps, in the Democratic Party. You never know. All right. Well, we're going to have to wrap up the week that was with that. I would like to thank my guests, Alan Lengel. Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Nancy Derringer, once again, for being here. Steve Fishman, we appreciate it as always. And Portia, enjoy the rest of your vacation. We certainly do appreciate you taking the time today. Thank you very much. Also, special thanks to Michael Lucido for engineering this broadcast. And for those of you checking it out today, perhaps you noticed it looks a little different. We have a new software program here that makes us polish it up a little bit. It looks a little bit more professional. And thanks for your patience today as we work through a few bugs on the system. But it will be good going forward. Also, thanks to our sponsor, of course, James Oliver Coffee Company. We appreciate that very much. And to everybody who watched, we really appreciate the fact that you were here with us as well. This is much more interactive. We can take your comments. We can put them on the screen. So next week or next time we do this, because I got to figure this out, we'll be able to take all that stuff. And we would love to hear from you. So everybody have a fantastic holiday weekend. Enjoy this last blast of summer weather. It's going to be nice out there. And we will talk again soon. The Craig Folly Show is made possible in part by Deadline Detroit. Deadline Detroit has some of the best journalists in the city. We're asking you to support independent local journalism by joining our $3 a month membership. By joining, you become eligible to win prizes, including tickets for sporting events and gift cards to some of Detroit's best restaurants. Just go to our website and click the ad at the top or go to www.deadlinedetroit.com/membership.